American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they call the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day to you. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, January 28th, 2005. It's been a great week so far. We got lots of news, lots of feedback coming in, lots of mail coming in. I'm really, really pleased with how well the show has been received in these last few weeks. Got some feedback right off the top. Dear Sean, dude, at 7:55 Central Standard Time this morning for 15 seconds, Rant TV was seen for 15.2 seconds on KOKH Fox 25, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, due to some inventiveness of a local group. And what was on Patrolling with Sean Kennedy, Season 1, Episode 6. My sources are highly reliable, and unlike the corporate machine, will probably deny it altogether. And that's from Newtowog. Well, that's very cool. I'd like to see if anyone managed to see that. If someone managed to, I'd like to get a bit more background story to hope nobody broke the law, hope nobody's going to get themselves in trouble. Last thing I want to see is a bunch of wogs get themselves locked down. But for those operatives out there who managed to make that happen, hey, that'd be very cool. It'd be even cooler if I could get a chance to see that. Very, very neat. No one, I don't think, has contacted us yet. Which, if anyone wanted to figure out what was going on there, I'm sure that Rant Media would at least, you know, be contacted, especially if there was something a little bit dodgy there. I'm sure that that would come across, but we'll see what happens. On to sort yourself out. Dear Sean, I have always had a profound love and wonder of all things fantasy. Yeah, I have so for a long time. The only thing I like more than reading fantasy is writing it. Well, good for you. I really dig the idea of inspiring people through storytelling, getting them to imagine a game. Sorry if I start sound a little too wordy. My question is, how do you organize your ideas for stories, and how do you clearly focus said ideas? Always have a hard time holding on to ideas, and the life of me, I have even a hard time getting them on paper. I never really make what I think translate onto what I say. Well, good place for me to screw up, huh? Whenever I get an idea, spurts it out, as always, the most inopportune times. I find it hard to regulate the flow of ideas just right, at which point I overload and erase, forgetting any good ideas I had and burning out for any and all focus and motivation. To call it writer's block would be an understatement. From one writer to another, what should I do? Okay, I know the answer to this. For those of you out there who are creative people and don't know how to, you know, keep track of all their creativity, the solution to this is now, hopefully you're working on a story or a book or a concept, or let's say you want to write a science fiction novel, okay, and you know you want the novel to be about a dude who you think is really cool. You come up with a swashbuckling science fiction dude, okay? Well, the trick is to carry around cue cards with you, and I'm not joking, they have to be cue cards, and whenever you get an idea for a scene, doesn't matter if the scene makes sense with the storyline, whatever, if you get this vision of a ship sailing through the atmosphere, but it's a pirate ship, and it's got these solar sails, and everything's on fire, and you have this vision, and it comes to you, you know, you're listening to music, and bang, there it is. Well, you write that down. And then you find yourself a bit of corkboard or whatever, and you stick it on the corkboard. And eventually, you get a whole bunch of these cue cards together, and you weave a storyline around the scenes. That's one way to do it. You should always have a notepad with you, period. And then go through your notepad at a regular, set a time, like on Fridays or on one day a week, where you actually sit down and go through your notepad, translate the ideas out. And quite often when you go through the notepad again, it will cue up ideas that you missed on the first or second pass. So the only way you can deal with this particular type of thing is you've got to write the idea down when you get them. If that means pulling over to the side of the road and bringing out the notepad, that's what it means. That's what you have to do. That's sure shit what I do, I'll tell you that. As for writer's block, I don't believe it exists. I think it's a myth. I believe that Stephen King, you know, the best book I ever read on writing. There's a lot of ideas which people talk about shit on writing. If you play role-playing games, there's nothing any writing book can teach you right off the top. Read everything you can get your hands on. If you're a science fiction guy, good. Read all the science fiction you get your hands on. Incidentally, Incidentally, I would like to have, if anyone wants to send me something, you can send it to the studio or whatever. I would like to start a collection of cyberpunk books. I don't have many. I have one Cyberpunk 2020 novel called The Hollow Man, and the original painting for the cover of that, Hollow Man, is for sale, which I'd love to pick up. It's a great piece of art. The original artist is selling it, but I don't know what he wants for it. I think it was like $300-$400 for it. It's a gorgeous piece of art of this guy, you know, transferring from this burned-out room into the web and stuff. It's fantastic 80s, real good vibe for it. I'd love to pick up that art, but it'd be interesting to get all the cyberpunk novels down, because there's not that many of them, really. I mean, there's like Worm and Snow Crash and, you know, all the Gibson stuff, all the Stevenson stuff. But really, how much cyberpunk did Stevenson write? I mean, really, he wrote Snow Crash, and then he went on to Cryptonomicon, but would that really qualify? I don't think so. I don't think so. Not in the, you know, the whole swashbuckling cyberpunk sense. It could be argued that someone would say, well, this is science fiction, but it's kind of cyberpunk. Well, you know, we want to keep it kind of Puritan about the whole cyberpunk thing. A cyberpunk book, there should be no question of whether or not it's cyberpunk, like Philip K. Dick stuff. You know, it's the vision of the future. It's being inside the machine. It's man-machine interface. Would Isaac Asimov's stuff be considered cyberpunk? Well, we're getting... I mean, it is science fiction, so it could be argued. But if anyone out there's got any old cyberpunk books that they don't want anymore, hey, throw them at me. I'd love to, you know, just drop it in the mailbox, because I'd love to get that particular portion of my library. So I'm hoping once, you know, we go full time with all this, that I think would be the... Everyone seems pretty keen for After Now and all that kind of jazz. So I figure that the first couple of books I'd like to put out would be to get some, you know, because I work for you, naturally. You know, as the donations are coming in and stuff like that, I mean, the internet is the people I work for, so if you guys are at least going to be getting 2 books a year out of me, so I figure that whatever you guys want to read, that's what I'll write. And it seems by an overwhelming majority that everyone seems to like the cyberpunk stuff, no matter how much my horror stuff I would like to write. It seems that the cyberpunk, which is okay, because cyberpunk is actually a horror genre. I will, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, but cyberpunk, the secret to writing good cyberpunk is it's very dark. It's extremely dark. And After Now is a very cyberpunk world. Most of the time in the series, I've covered the fringes, because no one ever talks about the fringes of the cyberpunk world. They talk about, you know, the downtown city core and arcologies and all the rest of it. But no one ever talks about, you know, the burned out soldiers back from the desert wars and things like that, which all that is just getting a little bit too scary for me. Hey, isn't there some creepy shit going on with that? I mean, check this story out straight into the news here. North Korea apparently has got a nuke. North Korea appears to have bought a complete nuclear weapon from either Pakistan or a former Soviet Union state, a South Korean newspaper said on Thursday, quoting a source in Washington. Now, how scary is that? Seol Shinmun quoted the source as saying the United States was checking the intelligence. Well, this is pretty bleeding-edge stuff. You know, I'd expect something like that to be leading for sure. The purchase was apparently intended to avoid nuclear weapons testing that could be detected from the outside, the source was quoted as saying. And North Korea is believed to have one or two nuclear weapons and possibly more than eight. Good Lord. North Korea is believed to have one or two nuclear weapons and possibly more than eight. Okay, so this is two separate ideas here. U.S. Congressman Kurt Weldon said after a visit to the North this month that it is a second-ranked leader had told his delegation it possessed nuclear weapons. Well, that's great. Pyongyang has declared that a nuclear reactor at Yongbyon, sealed under a 1994 agreement with the United States, has been restarted. Spent nuclear fuel from that reactor could be converted into weapons-grade material. North Korea has never officially declared that it possessed atomic weapons, speaking instead of its nuclear deterrent. Well, what the hell else would that be? You know, these guys aren't eating bad chili over there. U.S. experts who visited the Yongbyon factory said spent plutonium previously stored there had been removed. Well, where do you suppose it went? North Korea is suspected of running a separate program based on uranium enrichment technology, assisted by former top Pakistani nuclear scientists. Well, that's fantastic. It is a round ball. We do have to be somewhat cautious of the whole, you know, nuke thing. There's a great piece of homework that I recommend anyone check out this weekend. If you get a chance, check out a film called The Fog of War. Fantastic film. And I'm going to screw up the guy's name. His name is McNamara. Yeah. And anyway, he was the man during a lot of Nixon's time, and he picked out the gravesite of Kennedy and stuff like that. And this guy was, you know, really high up there in Washington. And he, on film, is saying that it was blind luck, really, that we didn't nuke ourselves into oblivion in the 50s. And the dude is still terrified of the bomb. Now, the bomb is a scary thing. And with the amount of war that's floating around in right now, I'm surprised that no one's bringing up the bomb more. Maybe they just think it's all desert war, you know, everyone's a bunch of savages, who cares, blah, 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 you know, there's people dying, and it's the great American war machine versus, you know, the small and terrorist insurgent. Because if any of these guys have the bomb, you know, these are people willing to strap explosives to themselves, to their chests, and blow up school buses, and apparently fly planes into buildings. But, you know, well, there seems to be some fishy stuff going on with that. But nevertheless, this is the kind of conviction. I'm sure that, you know, it's possible. I mean, you, if a person's willing to strap a bomb to their chest, what are they not unwilling to do? I mean, really. So I would say that perhaps we should be more concerned about what's going on in the nuclear strain of things. I mean, really. Last thing I want is to, you know, be putting on some 7 million sunblock. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of a bad day there. So apparently, back to the file sharing. File sharing's in danger again. Oh no, file sharing's in danger. Yes, a bill to criminalize file sharing on the internet is rapidly moving through U.S. Congress. The measure, which last week is just a draft proposing circulating among members of the House Judiciary Committee and Subcommittee of the Courts, the Internet, and Intellectual Property, has been scheduled for action by that panel tomorrow afternoon. So that would be this afternoon. Reportedly, the proposal law makes it easier for U.S. Department of Justice to seek criminal prosecutions against file sharers of copyrighted materials. It also establishes jail time, and fines for anyone who shares 2,500 or more pieces of content or distribute a single file worth more than $10,000 U.S. Well, that's a pretty big loophole there. So if, you know, as long as you don't have more than 10 grand U.S., you're okay. The House bill, whose sponsors remain uncertain, appeared after Senator Orrin Hatch, oh boy, and Patrick Leahy, yeah, we know about these guys, filed different legislation in the Senate. That legislation would extend the Department of Justice power to file lawsuits in civil rather than criminal copyright infringement cases. It's critical that we bring, check this out, the moral force of government to bear against those who knowingly violate federal copyrights enshrined in our Constitution, Hatch said in a statement. You know, Orrin Hatch, you know, that's fucking fantastic. This prick is talking about the moral force of the government. The moral force of the government. You know, we're not saying what kind of moral force the government has, but I don't think you'd want to be wielding. The last thing I want is the moral force of the government showing up in my house, because I don't think your government's all that moral there, Orrin. Hatch said in a statement, but many of us remain concerned that using criminal law enforcement remedies to act against these infringers could have an overly harsh effect. Okay, when Orrin Hatch is saying something is overly harsh, you know, maybe there might be something to that. Perhaps, for example, putting thousands of otherwise law-abiding teenagers and college students in jail and branding them with a lifelong stigma of a felony criminal conviction. Nice terror tactic there, Orrin. Christ. You know, you figure the guy changed his name. I don't understand, you know, really, why everyone is so incredibly, like, terrified. It's not like these kids are, like, they're talking about jail time. Okay? For what? For music? Come on, don't you guys have something better to do with your time? Why don't you guys put this much effort towards, oh, I don't know, say, stopping organized crime? Or the Hell's Angels or some other terrorist organization like that? No. Let's go after the file sharers. The only reason why you're doing this is because of big business. It's a joke. It's all, like, who's bending to who? He maintained that his proposal, called the Protecting Intelligence Rights Against Theft and Expropriation Act, the Pirate Act. Jesus. What is this, G.I. Joe? The Pirate Act? How many fucking monkeys did you need working on that to come up with pirate as an acronym for your act? You pinhead. Will allow the Department of Justice to supplement its existing criminal enforcement powers through the new civil enforcement mechanism. As a result, he said, the department will be able to impose stiff penalties for violating copyrights, but can avoid criminal action when warranted. So, what the hell? This is just making this already outstanding law into just a screaming whim law there, Orrin? Is that the idea? We're just gonna, you know, well, this gives us the option, you know, because, after all, this is the New World Order. And corporations gotta have options. if we can't beat them up in, you know, court, then I guess we'll send them to jail. Because if it's an added bonus to send, you know, file shares to jail, because then it's up to the government to prosecute these people, and the corporations don't have to spend their hard-earned cash going to court, and after all, they might lose because you might get some jury there, and you might be able to get some people who aren't hopelessly doped out on medication who could possibly, you know, wake up, smell the roses, and go, wait, this is about music and children. Maybe they shouldn't be sent to jail for music. Just a thought. Just a general idea here. I can't believe this, man. You know, and of course, you know, what are we reading about in the news right now? We're reading about elections in Iraq. That's what's top story is right now. The elections in Iraq. Who gives a shit about the elections in Iraq? We can't run an election in this country, and you expect me to be caring a fuck about the elections in Iraq? Give me a break, man. Now, another, you know, there's going to be a lot of guys coming back from Iraq, and for the record, you know, at least once or twice a week, I get the urge to just jump in my car, drive down across the line, and enlist in the U.S. Army. A lot of people don't know that, and they think, what? What? Yeah, yeah, it's true. I do. I think that way. I think I could make a difference over there. I think that I could probably, I don't know, keep a couple of those kids alive. Because, you know, I was a pretty good soldier when I was in. You know, and even to this day, the reason why I do these news broadcasts is because, well, I feel that it's right to fight injustice. Some would say, well, Sean, if you're over there, you're going to fight for oil and die for oil. Well, yeah, there's that. But as a soldier, quite often, you're given orders that are really kind of bizarre, and you have to, well, you have to see how many people you can't kill versus how many people you can kill. Now, everyone in Iraq is trying to, you know, shoot the soldiers, and everything's, you know, pretty brutal. But I guarantee you me, there are acts of kindness and tenderness which are happening, maybe in scattered pockets, but there are soldiers over there right now who are coming back, and, you know, they're changed human beings. You can't go to war and not come back a changed human being. Now, they got this idea here because, you know, there's shell shock, okay? Naturally, you go over there, and there's post-traumatic stress syndrome. I suffer from similar sort of, well, I suffer from post-traumatic stress. It's not combat-related, or maybe it is. I don't know. But I know a little something about flashbacks, and I know a little something about this disorder. Now, I guess this is an interesting idea where they want to use virtual reality to treat that. I would question how effective it is because unless people are, you know, already predisposed, because certain people can get into video games. As everyone knows, not everyone can play a first-person shooter, okay? Not everyone can just jump on there and just start humming along. Some people's brains don't work that way. And there's been a lot of research done for people who, you know, are genetically predisposed to be able to suck up first-person shooters and all that. So maybe this will work for some people, maybe it won't. While the real Iraq is more than enough for most people to handle, there's a virtual Iraq lurking in the laptop of psychologist Skip Rizzo. Now, the last thing I want is a guy named Skip Rizzo. You know, you don't bring back a desert warrior who's been cutting people up and then hand him to a psychologist named Skip Rizzo, a research scientist at the University of Southern California. With a push of a button, special effects will appear. A mosque call to prayer and a sandstorm, the sounds of bullets and bombs. We can put a person in a VR headset and have them walk down the streets of Baghdad, Rizzo said. They can ride in a Humvee or fly in a helicopter over a battle scene or drive on a desert road. This is no video game, nor is it a training device. Rizzo and colleagues are developing a psychologist tool to treat post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, by bringing soldiers back to the scenes that still haunt them. A similar simulation is in the work for victims of the World Trade Center attacks. Okay, well, post-traumatic stress disorder treatment is the newest frontier in the intersection between virtual reality and mental health. Now, I can see this. I don't think this is being properly utilized. I think Skip here is pulling the wool over people's eyes and not just a helmet. It's one of the hot topics this week at the 13th annual Medicine Meets Virtual Reality Conference. Yeah, that's the 13th one of those. Okay, let's see where this goes. Which began Wednesday in Long Beach, California. Rizzo and others will explore plans to expand virtual reality's role in mental health by adding more elements like touch and the ability to interact with simulations. The driving vision is a holodeck, Rizzo said. If you look at the holodeck and all the things people do in Star Trek, that's what we'd like to be able to do. Okay, well, Skip, guess what? They're, you know, Dr. Rizzo. We'd all like to have a holodeck. We'd all just order pizza, load up the Soviet Saint program, and you'd catch us again in a couple of months. Okay? The truth of the matter is, I've had a chance to mess around with, like, the VFX units and the VFX 3D. And yeah, they're really cool, don't get me wrong. I mean, I get one in a heartbeat. They're very, very immersive and highly, highly sexy. And of course, you know, interactive image, like Forte Technologies came out with the VFX 1, which was the best you know, commercially available virtual reality headset for consumers. You know, that was in price range here, I'm talking, okay? There's other higher grade ones, but I'm not spending $40,000 on a helmet, okay? Give me a break. Now, Fork changed their names to Interactive Imaging Systems, and they've been working on, you know, they've been promising the X Viewer now, it's next year, and it's vapor, okay? And the thing that's stopping the wearable industry from moving forward is the display. Micro Optical, okay, has probably come out with the best thing in the last little while. Personal Monitor hasn't changed their shit in like 2 years. Interactive Imaging Systems wanted to get into the PDA market, and sure, you know, they come up with some stuff. Cybernauts come out with the Poma handheld, you know. I mean, I'm right down on this stuff because I've always wanted to go gargoyle and hook myself completely in. But the problem is that we're not, just not quite there yet. Yeah, we can do it if you take a vest and you mac it all out, all modular, and hook it up. I mean, you're going to look like you're Steve Mann walking around. Maybe a little bit better than Steve Mann, but still, you know, it's going to make it hard to pick up a chick with all this gear on. That's what I'm saying here. So we got to get it so it's a little bit more seamless before we can get all excited about it. Now, back to this virtual reality shell shock thing. Now, I've looked at some of the images there, and I'm here to tell you, okay, any treatment you can get from this VR game, you could get from a VFX 3D and put the guy on one of the, you know, like Navy SEALs games or any of the Desert War games. It's just about exposure over and over again so that you get used to it so it's not so bad. Now, I don't know if that's actually going to work. I think there's a lot of other things at play here rather than just, oh, I have nightmares about Iraq. I think there's going to be deeper issues that are going to show up. People are going to be wondering, you know, did my government lie to me? Should I have killed these people? Am I bad? Am I going to hell for this? You know, things like that. You know, I can't get this child out of my mind. I saw this kid. He was standing on the side of the road, and then this bomb went off, and there was blood everywhere, and the kid was just standing there, and he wouldn't move, and I don't know why the kid wouldn't move. He was just standing there staring at us, you know, and he just stood there. And we were there for like 20 minutes, and the kid was still staring. Okay, that's the kind of shit you got to worry about. That's the kind of shit that floats around inside your head. It's not just the choppers and the simulation. There's lots of stuff that plays in on that. And, you know, Skip Rizzo there may think that this, you know, you might be able to just play some video games and fix these soldiers. And maybe he might do some good. You know, I'm ripping on the guy or whatever. You know, maybe his concept will do some good. You know, I mean, at least he's trying. You know, you got to give him that. At least he's doing something for these soldiers. But, I mean, the shell-shocked Desert Warrior, when he comes back, is going to be in bad shape. And the homeless situation, my God. The last thing you want is a bunch of these guys who have been slitting throats for the last, you know, a couple of years in the middle of the desert. You know, you don't want these guys to be, you know, just dropped out of the cold. Thanks for your service. Here's your medal. Thank you for calling. Please go to the local bar, get drunk, and wait for some poor, unfortunate hick to fuck with you, and then you'll carve up his ass. Okay, because that's sick. It's not cool. Violence is not cool. It's a tool which should never be used when angry. And a lot of these guys are going to come back, and there's going to be a lot of anger issues for a lot of years. This is what war does. We lost a whole generation to the Second World War. Alcoholism, everything else. We lost another generation to Vietnam. I mean, is anyone learning from this? You're not going to make this go away. Now, chasing this peer-to-peer file, you know, sharing thing, everyone's talking, oh my God, they're going to shut down peer-to-peer. Okay, let's just bear in mind, they ain't going to shut down shit. Because no matter how hard they try to shut down peer-to-peer, we're just going to build other peer-to-peer stuff that'll out-circumvent it. And if that doesn't work, we'll go back to news groups. Or we'll come up with something else that's new and brilliant. Or we'll come up with something that's like a storm that, you know, isn't even a client. It's just, you know, floating. You're not going to beat it. These guys want to spend a whole bunch of money. Why don't you guys try to make money with the peer-to-peer stuff? You know? Try to just embrace it. If like Time Warner, look at it this way. If Time Warner were to suddenly change their tune and go, you know what, we're not going to stop it, so we'll just, you know, we'll cater to these people. We'll say, okay, you know, and maybe with the movies, make sure you please buy them if you're going to watch them, rather than saying, do this or we'll kill you. Just say, hey, if you enjoy the movies, we made the movies, you can add it to your collection, we made these really cool cases and everything, let's put some quality back into what we purchase, rather than the 37 cents worth of stuff we get when we spend the $40. Just a thought. And don't feed me a line of shit about, well, we need to make our money back. You make it back in the theaters. Okay? You make it back in all kinds of sales. There's shirts, there's all kinds of stuff. Don't give me that. You just want more money. But anyway, there's some new peer-to-peer stuff has been released. Developers this week released spyware-free version of the popular peer-to-peer app Exeem, E-X-E-E-M. I hope I'm saying that right. The official version of Exeem, which entered the public beta this week, is contaminated with adware app called Sidor. Dun, dun, dun. Exeem Lite 0.19 is smaller, 1.9 meg compared to 2.5 meg, and promises file trading without search hijacking and pop-up bombardment. Unlike Exeem, Exeem Lite is also available to Linux users who want to run the app using Wine. Enjoy it while you can. History suggests it's a matter of time before developers of Exeem sue the developers of Exeem Lite or try to exclude users from the peer-to-peer network. That's what's happening with Kazaa Lite, remember? Exeem was based on the BitTorrent idea, but with nodes in the program taking the role of BitTorrent trackers. As the Exeem Lite FAQ explains, connecting to the network can be a little hit and miss. Our attempts to connect with networks using Exeem Lite proved fruitless until we applied the registry patch for Exeem Lite available on my Exeem. This update on the app with the list of valid nodes needs to establish connection, and a patch can be applied automatically on XP. But changes must be done manually using RegEdit on Win 2000 or Windows 98 machines, which incidentally is what my poor little laptop runs because it's just a little IBM 770E. You know, P2, 266, O's mean nothing, man. This thing just goes. That's the other thing that's odd, too. There's no real, you know, quality with anything that they're being making now. You notice that? I mean, how long do we really think some of these laptops are going to last? I'll tell you one thing, though. In my particular job at work, I get a chance to tear apart every single, you know, pretty much every single corporation's electronics. And so far, the guys who put the most effort, like if you were to just take the cases off DVD players and other electronics and look at the inside guts, see which ones look like they actually have some substance to them, I'd have to say Sony. I really would. I think that Sony probably makes the best stuff. You're paying for it. Do I think that the margin that you have to pay the extra for is worth it? Well, no. But you do. I mean, everybody else is, you know, they just got, you know, the same knockoff parts as everyone else. And some of Sony's stuff looks a little bit better. So if I was going to buy tech and you haven't got any evaluations to go on, I'd probably start with a Sony and go from there. Now, here's a story which at first seems like a good idea, but then makes me a little concerned. Some of the wording in here kind of freaks me out. An international police task force called the Virtual Global Task Force. Danger, danger. This international police task force has launched a website where children can report possible online pedophile activity. Okay, sounds good so far. We all hate pedophiles here. The site's logo will appear on AOL, BT, Vodafone, and Microsoft's websites, providing a hot link to the homepage of the Virtual Global Task Force. I really like the logo of these guys. It's like an eye instead of a head on this thing. It's kind of very runish. The Virtual Global Task Force aims to make the internet a safer place for children and a more hostile place for pedophiles. Okay, now, anything that claims to be this for the safety of children makes my hair stand up because that's a really easy way to sell people some scary ideas. Everyone hates pedophiles, so you're either with us or you're against us. You know, it's the same, that sort of mentality. It is a result of international collaboration between the National Crime Squad and its counterparts in Canada, U.S., and Australia. One other large internet sort of monitoring device was done by Canada, U.S., and Australia. Would that be Echelon? Children who are worried that they might be chatting online with a pedophile or are being tricked into a meeting can use the site to learn how to get the person's IP address and user's name. Now, you got to be careful with this because you could just get some kids who decide, you know what, I'm going to cause some damage and, you know, they cry witch. Now, that's a pretty harsh thing to say, you know, children crying rich, but it's happened before. Okay, so we got to make sure there's some checks and balances here. If the guy's a pedophile and you have proof the guy's a pedophile, yeah, nail his head to the floor. Rock on. But let's be sure here. Let's just, you know, pick your targets. Know your targets. You can't just indiscriminately start shooting here. They can also use the site to record the details of any conversation with the suspected pedophile, which can be used as evidence if authorities decide to prosecute. The information can also be used to warn offenders. Now, this is weird. This is weird. You don't want to warn pedophiles because that drives them underground. You want to bring them out into the open so that you can arrest them. Why would you want to warn the pedophile? You're doing the pedophile a service then. The site contains links to other sources of information on online abuse and child safety agencies. Jim Gamble, Deputy Director General of the National Crime Squad, said that clicking on the logo was like walking through a police station door. He's quoted in the Daily Mail as saying, "If you're a child online and you're approached by someone in a chat room, you now have access to law enforcement. It is a reminder that the internet is no longer anonymous for potential offenders. Bullshit. It's totally anonymous. You just need to know some more tricks. This is the equivalent of a speed camera telling them to slow down and think again." Okay, now, first of all, I'm not really crazy about the correlation between someone speeding and a pedophile. Furthermore, if you sweep pedophiles under the rug, they're not going to go away, okay? They're just going to get smarter about how they do things. Now, these pedophiles who exist today on the web are very clever people. They're sick, deranged motherfuckers, but they're very clever about it, okay? There's a massive child sex trade going on in the East, in Thailand and Vietnam and all these places, okay? The girls don't even have names anymore. They have numbers on their belt, and they get purchased by numbers. The younger ones, of course, you know, big bucks, all the rest of it. Now, if people are serious about stopping this, you know, entire sex industry, why don't they just go over there and arrest these motherfuckers doing it? You know? They're hunting terrorism. Why don't they go get some of these pedophiles? Because these pedophiles are going to come back. And you think, you know, oh, well, they go to Thailand, sate their, you know, lurid desires and their sick, twisted dreams, and they come back and everything's fine. No. No, it's not. That's, you know, so they fuck someone else's kids and that's okay? No, 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 no. No, no, no. Something's wrong there. You know, we need to stop trying to sweep it under the rug. Don't try to warn the pedophiles. Encourage those sons of bitches. Have them come out in the open so we can line up on them. Wink at them at about 50 feet. I've got no time for people who exploit and damage children in that way. I'll be the first one to stand up and say, hey, you know, if you want to know, you want a contestant for a guy to pull a trigger, that would be me. But the problem is that when you have things like, you know, the Global Task Force, an internet task force, and they start with the pedophiles, I'd like to make sure we keep track of what exactly happens with the virtual global task force. What else are they going to enforce after they, you know, well, you loved us when we were killing pedophiles. Now we're going after pirates and file sharers. We're Netwatch. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. Now, I'm all about, don't get me wrong, we got to hunt the pedophiles down. I'm all about that. But don't piss on my back and tell me it's raining. If you're serious about the pedophiles, there's all kinds of ways to physically go and find these people who want to fuck kids. There's all kinds of child sex going on all over the world. Let's stop that, okay? Because it's happening right now. Now, you remember that company, Wares? They're those, that's that health insurance company that decided they were going to fire people for smoking. Do you remember that? I covered that this week. Well, I got some more news regarding those guys. They suck even more shit, and they like it. A Michigan healthcare company that fired 4 employees for smoking. Okay, you ready for this one? This just, you know, anyone who works with these companies, I mean, they must feel totally like, you know, just THX 1138. Complete lab rats. You cannot smoke on your own time. Now it's targeting people who are fat. Howard Weyers, the founder of Waco Incorporated, said he wants to tell fat workers to lose weight or else. Reuters reported this. Weyers brought in weight experts to speak with employees, according to Reuters. The company also offered employees a $35 a month incentive for joining a health club and a $65 a month for meeting goals. We'll give you this little bit of treat. You want a cookie? Want a cookie? Jump through the hoop. Want a cookie? Jump. Like, oh my God. You don't think that people who are out of shape know? You don't think that people who are actually, you know, put on weight, they don't know that? Fat people know they're fat, okay? They're aware, painfully aware of how fat they are every time they wash themselves, every time they look in the mirror, every time they kind of dress up, every time they meet new people, okay? People know they're out of shape. They don't need a corporation to threaten their job because they're out of shape. We're living in very tough times right now. You got to work extremely hard just to make it. So some people, everyone's built differently, man. Some people, yeah. Maybe they're brilliant. Maybe they type all day. Maybe they're so busy working that they forget to go work out and you put on weight. Happened to me. Especially in the tech industry. My God, we never go outside. Outside? Outside what? The big blue room? I don't know. Anyone concerned about limiting employees' rights to specify terms of employment should know that federal law protects people with conditions like obesity, alcoholism, and AIDS. But there's no right to adults in tobacco, the new release said. Four Waco employees were fired after the company enacted a new policy this month, allowing workers to be fired if they smoke, even if smoking takes place after hours at home. Well, you know, not only can we get you if you smoke weed, now if you smoke cigarettes and if you can drink beer, oh, no, no, no drinking beer, and you've been eating too many calories. We're sorry. This is your third written warning for eating a ho-ho. Are donuts allowed in the office private pile? Are you allowed to eat jelly donuts, office worker pile? I mean, come on. Yeah, people are out of shape. But how much do you have to humiliate them? You know, that's just sick. Now, in northern BC, I live in British Columbia. This broadcast comes out at just outside of Vancouver. In Vancouver, British Columbia, it seems that a core political company has purchased a town, an entire town, an abandoned but well-maintained British Columbia mining town, complete with library, pub, and hospital, has been sold to an unidentified Virginia property developer who must now decide what he wants to do with it. Holy crap. The buyer paid less than $7 million Canadian for Kitsault, located on a fjord near the Alaskan Panhandle, about 500 miles, 800 clicks, northwest of Vancouver, the town's marketing agent said on Tuesday. The isolated town went on the block in September after standing vacant under the watch of a caretaker for nearly two decades. The residents left the town when a collapse in metal prices shut a nearby molybdenum mine. Rudy Nelson of Niho Land and Cattle said 10 offers were submitted for Kitsault, which has been owned by U.S. copper giant Phelps Dodge. The company keeps ownership of the mining of the company is keeping ownership of a mine site, so they just sold the town, but the mine is ours. Nielsen said the investor has not decided what to do with the site. It was once home to several thousand people in 90 houses and 210 apartments, as well as a dock, shopping center, gym, and curling rink. There's something about owning a town. There's a mystique about it. He'll worry well about what to do with it later, Nielsen said. Well, if a corporation can buy a town in BC, why, oh, why can't I? Oh, man. Could you imagine what I could do with a town? Like, imagine now, let's just run rampant. Newsreel, patrolling with Sean Kennedy, all the uprising, the entire movement picks up momentum. 5 years from now, I'm all over the web. It's a dream come true. And I've got all kinds of donations coming in. I make, you know, the Sean Kennedy Foundation. And, of course, I want to have a physical location where all the walls can go. This is all stuff that I want to do. Could you imagine if I bought a town? My God, that'd be rad. I mean, the security there would be insane. No one would be hacking shit from there. And I can promise you, no one would be like, oh, wow, you know? Could you just imagine if you were to set up the whole thing like some gigantic commune? I mean, yeah, sure, why not? I'll say it. Yeah. Why not have a commune? A web commune. Some kind of a fantastic net web commune. God, that'd be great. I'd love to get my hands on something like that. Especially when you come across stories like this one here, where Big Brother is knocking at the door. We appear to be on the brink of a post-September 11th surveillance society. In one optimistic scenario, the U.S. is employing a full range of technical ingenuity to ferret out terrorists, who we're not even sure are terrorists. Or we're not even sure if there are real terrorists attacking us or if it's all a dupe. Using all the resources of the digital age and its quirky software geniuses. Meanwhile, dazzling new biometric identifiers, iris scans, voice prints, DNA registries, and facial recognition software are about to reduce identity theft to a quaint memory. Even while they shorten airport security lines and speed up credit approvals. But a less appealing second scenario, we could be on the verge of surrendering every detail about our private lives to an all-knowing Big Brother alliance of cops and mysterious private security corporations, also known as mercenaries and corpoliticals. They'll promise to protect us from terrorists, but along with that safety, we face arbitrary and unappealable decisions on who can fly in a commercial airliner, rent a truck, borrow money, or even stay out of jail. That's the conundrum at the center of the No Place to Hide. A finely balanced look at the seesaw struggle between security and privacy. Author Robert O'Hara Jr., a Washington Post reporter, deftly shows how the government and its contractors have been lurching between two goals ever since September 11th terror attacks raised Homeland Security to public's top priority. And is it really the public's top priority, or are they just telling us it is? Because I don't think it is. I think people are still worried about putting food on the table. The biggest threat and the biggest promise seem to line up with official government databases, but with the private companies that sell information to all levels of government and to banks, airlines, credit card companies, mortgage holders, car rental agencies, and the like. We may not know much about Choice Pont, CPS, or Axiom, Equifax, H&F Software, LexisNexis, or Sisint, but they've heard of you, and more than you can imagine. Many of these companies, such as InfoGiants, Axiom Corp, or Equifax, began by keeping tracks of such things as bankruptcies for credit card vendors. But many of them are now able to provide lists of people who take Prozac for depression, believe in the Bible, gamble online, or buy sex toys. Another outfit maintains a 700,000 name list called the Gay America Megafile. Okay, 700,000 names on the Gay America Megafile. And a Choice Pont has more than 250 terabytes of data on 220 million people. If printed out, those records could extend to the moon and back 77 times. Now, that's not something that I want to really be a part of. That is not the kind of America that I imagine. Now, remember back again, too, when we look at this, obviously, this is why now the cyberpunk is really going to be becoming more of a, well, of a hero. He's going to be the person who finds out the data, who, you know, releases the truth to people, who finds out, you know, what the cures for diseases are when they're found. Because there are scientists, there are people who work in these corporations who are truly noble. There are people who will stand up and say, you know what we're doing, these drugs we're selling to people for antidepressants, they're poisonous. I know they're poisonous. I don't care if I get fired for this. I don't care if I get killed for this. We're killing people, and it's got to stop. Those people need a way to out that. And if the media is completely controlled, how are they going to out that? How are they going to get that on the web? They're going to just put it on the web? Well, nobody believes anything that's in the web. That's another thing I'll notice, too. You ever notice on the news reports or in the radio, they always slam the web. Well, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true, eh? It's got to be true. It's on the internet, you idiot. No one believes anything on the internet. Well, you know, rather than denying it, let's just release 30 stories of the same thing. That'll work, too. Now, remember when we were talking about the brain scanning stuff? People were targeting brain scanning. I got a really wordy article. I linked it here. But if you haven't seen the film Gattaca, go rent it this weekend. Go acquire that film and watch it. Because companies are talking about using brain scans now on the core political edge. Now, this is from an article I've linked to off my live journal. Go to my live journal. You'll be able to get all this stuff. You know it'll be time to switch to the next story when I say something to the effect of, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. Now, this is from this article about what's happening with brain scan technology, who's sponsoring it, and who's getting involved with brain scan marketing and stuff like this. Check this out. Some entrepreneurs and researchers are carrying brain imaging to new non-medical territory that could be ethically treacherous. Okay, there's no non-medical use for brain scanning. Some of these uses, such as lie detections, are already upon us. That's pretty loose, calling brain scanning lie detectors. Those polygraphs aren't really much of a brain scanner. Others, such as the use of brain scans to screen job applicants, seem almost certain to be explored or developed. Okay, for a job application? Close behind the neuro entrepreneurs are neuroethicists at places like the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Cognitive Neuroscience and Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics, who are trying to identify and resolve the ethical concern raised by these applications. Are scanning technologies really appropriate for non-medical uses? No brainer there. If personal information is collected by a non-medical commercial interest, how can we ensure its confidentiality? Well, that's easy. You can't. Perhaps the best-known and least-threatening non-medical use of our emerging neuromarketing industry. Okay, now there's a buzzword. Neuromarketing. That scares the shit out of me. At least one well-funded firm, Brighthouse Neurostrategies Group, okay, remember that name, is trying to learn how to better market everything from licorice to liquor by scanning volunteers as they view ads or other media to see how different advertising approaches activate different brain areas. Okay, who would volunteer for that? This strikes many as offensive. I would say it strikes everyone as offensive. Do we need yet more insidious ways to stir the consumer lust? I'm going to start wearing my sunglasses all the time. Yet, neuromarketing, while perhaps in poor taste, seems harmless next to other possibilities. More problematic is use of brain testing for high-tech lie detection. Neurologist Larry Falwell's Brain Fingerprinting Laboratories is the most predominant such outfit. Falwell contracts, this guy's a merc, with public and private investigators can deduct brainwave analysis called multifaceted electroencephalographic response analysis, or MIRA, where he claims he can tell whether a suspect is familiar with evidence, a crime scene, a face, a piece of furniture, or clothing. Now, any good defense attorney should be able to rip this guy a new asshole, but that's some pretty scary shit. That would be known only to the perpetrator of a particular crime. The suspect views a series of images on a computer screen while wearing one of these little caps full of EEG-like sensors. The sensors pick up distinctive bursts of neuronal activity when the suspect sees something familiar. Most neurologists consider this method sound. Okay, well, you know, I'd want to check that again. It's the application that gets messy. Who uses it? Whether the proper controls are established? Whether the images shown could truly be known by only whoever committed the crime? In high-profile cases like those Farrell has worked on, such as a successful effort to free wrongly convicted murderer Terry Harrington, such issues get close to scrutiny. But if brain fingerprinting becomes common, shoddy or dishonest technique could produce false convictions. Well, yeah, obviously, when you start talking about brain scanning people, I mean this is bleeding edge stuff. The most complex, fraught, and uncertain aspect of brain imaging being discussed by neuroethicists is potential use of technologies to hold for screening job and school applications. I mean, you don't have any control over your brain, guys. I mean, how many people are so, like, there's brilliant, everyone who's ever done anything really significantly brilliant, like Einstein couldn't tie his shoes, would you wipe him out too? They're looking for a model for creative genius, and it's just not going to work. This so far remains more hypothetical notion than a budding industry, and no company or school has announced plans to scan applicants yet. Yet many ethicists feel temptation may be overwhelming. How to resist a screen that can gauge precisely the sort of traits, persistence, extroversion, and ability to focus or multitask that makes good employees or students? Obviously, you can't. Of course they're going to be using this. It's only a matter of time. So we have to come up with Zen ways and self-hypnosis ways to defeat that. You can create it, we can hack it. Now, I remember I was talking a while back about Eye on the Prize. That was a civil rights film that came out, and it was made illegal, and no one could watch it. Well, it seems there's a bit of a follow-up here. A group of file-sharing activists is practicing a little civil disobedience on its own in order to bring the documentary series Eyes on the Prize to a wider audience. This is cool. As Wired News first reported, Eye on the Prize, the 14-part series chronicling the civil rights movement, can no longer be broadcast on television, and it has never been released on DVD because of copyright restrictions. Nice try to restrict our access to information, you core political bastards. The series combines archival footage like newsreel clips, photographs, and songs from many different sources and is considered the principal film account of the most important American social justice movement of the 20th century. According to Claiborne Carson at Stanford University, history professor and editor of the Martin Luther King Jr.'s newspaper. Licensing agreements for some of the material used in the series were granted for a set number of years and have since expired. Blackside, the production company, is on the process of determining the cost to re-clear the rights. Okay, it's history, guys. It's our history. It's American history. We have a right to know it. Your daily hack today is to know your enemy. I got Zijin Machina sent me a fantastic link from Temple of the Screaming Electron about interrogation. Now, I encourage everyone to read all they can about interrogation, questioning, how questioning is done. So if ever you get arrested, you know what techniques they're using. Once you know what techniques are being used on you, you can step outside of those techniques. You can see what he's going to do. You can anticipate his move. And you don't need to let him know that you know what he's doing. You can tell him what he wants to hear in order to let you go. So check out today's daily hack, Knowing Your Enemy, and how to live through interrogation. It's a really good idea. It's a very, very brief, it's kind of a brush over, but I think it's a very good article. Check it out. That's all I got for you today. But don't worry, Sim and I will be back on Monday to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast. You can distribute it. You can copy it. You can burn it. You can hand it out to anyone you like. And it was made possible by the generous actions and donations for the people who donated during the month of December. The people who did that, the people who, when the great score comes to red against these names, will show that they have stood up for truth and justice in these trying times are Jesse, Lars, Michael, Matt, Andrew, Kevin, Derek, Eric, Jason, Peter, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Timor, Greg, Richard, WebLife, Drake, Matt, Evan, Brian, Ashton, David, Austin, Jonathan, Adam, William, Trevor, Jonathan, Mark, Kitsune, Art, Matthew, Christopher, Kyle, Justin, and Matthew. And very special thanks once again to all of you who donated. Thank you. If you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air and keep independent media flowing freely through the blood veins of Rant Radio, please, or Rant Media. Jeez, it's hard for me to remember that now. It's always Rant Media. Rant Media. Every time I say Rant Radio, just think of Rant Media unless I'm specifically talking about Rant Radio. But anyway, if you'd like to donate and keep me in a job, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on donate. Special thanks to some hard netrunners who are tearing through the web trying to find my stories. Transix, Sylvanus, Jijin Machina, Ricky Rocket, Wagawar, Inui Bush, Valaki, Suburban, BlitzCon, and Bubbles. Some digital baptisms this week. Well, Bubbles is now known as Shellshucked. That's like shell-shocked, only shell-shucked. And Lenny is now known as Tom Chainsawyer. So those are those two. Bubbles, Shellshocked. Lenny is now Tom Chainsawyer. And for everyone who has gathered any information or sent me email, thank you very much. I did have a crash on my computer right when I was doing emails and I was opening stuff. Poor little 266 had a burnout. Not its fault. Don't hate the computer. But I may have dropped a story or two. If I said a story was going to be in today's broadcast, I'm sorry. If I've missed a baptism, please let me know. And if you have any access to any information or any other stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up Christopher Lawrence's album, Temptation. Very cool, very trancy. I like it a lot. A little bit housey for me, but I like it. It's good energy music and good to work to. So until Monday, that's what Server said. End of line.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. and at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around, whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down. When the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured hundredweight and penny pound. When the man comes around.
His name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.